Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, world, and welcome to Realty Universal Radio, the fastest hour in radio, no doubt about it. I'm Randy Zachary, and this is a show about real estate, about God, about life, about giving back, about being the change in the world that you'd like to see. I'm privileged to bring to you Natalie Mullinex and Realty Universal, a company dedicated to excellence. Realty Universal is a revolution founded on a very simple principle. We believe sellers and buyers should have choices. We have been a pioneer in the menu program system. More on that, of course, a little later. Natalie Mullinex, president and founder of Realty Universal, averaged over $80 million a year in sales prior to stepping back to focus more on building Realty Universal membership network. She's an accomplished speaker, writer, consultant, trainer, and, oh, by the way, mother. She travels worldwide, literally, spreading the gospel, if you will, of Realty Universal. And now, Natalie Mullinex.
Hey, everybody. I'm so happy to be here another week and spend this hour with you. And so much is going on. I feel like our world's changed so much in the last 2 months and all over the world, literally, with the coronavirus. And I think so many people are just shocked and don't know what to do and are stunned. And here in the U.S., thank God the government's coming in with stimulus plans. Different countries are handling it different ways with their plans. And this is the real deal. This is kind of something like that most people in my generation, your generation, haven't dealt with it. Now, a lot of the older folks maybe dealt with the Depression and World War II. But I don't think we've had a virus like this since, 1918? It's been it's kind of crazy. And I hope everybody out there is safe. Getting to work from home, we've been doing it for 20 years in our industry, really pushing everybody to work from home. And I think a lot's going to change after this when they see a lot's going to change after this when everybody sees what it's going to that it makes a benefit with businesses, and so much is going to happen. But in the interim, what do we do? Well, the stimulus plan, real estate, how to cope, pay bills. Kevin Lum is going to weigh in today for us. And Kevin is a financial planner and investment advisor. He focuses on impact investing, socially responsible investing, value-based planning, currently leading Foundry Financial with offices in Los Angeles and D.C. Foundry Financials wants to help you do well and do good through value-based financial planning and impact investing. And now this is such an important time. After getting over the shock of the coronavirus, and I don't say this lightly. I don't mean everybody's going to be like, what do you mean? We're in the middle of it. Are you crazy? Like, I can't pay bills. I can't do this. I don't mean we have to do that, but I mean the initial shock with, like, is this real? I don't think a lot of people really were paying a lot of attention to it. And me too. I was paying attention, but I was like, oh, it's probably like a flu and in the beginning. And so I want to say getting over the initial shock of the coronavirus, you have to stay strong, calm, be calm, lead while staying safe. One little note, because you want the one, many know me and then many don't know me who are listening to this. So the ones that don't know me, I have to say, you know, we need to keep our immune systems up. And if we have anxiety and freak out and stress and fight or flight, we're going to pick our immune systems lower. So it's even more important to stay calm right now, as hard as it is. Kevin's passion is helping people identify their dreams and then develop a financial plan and investment strategy that aligns with their values. Whether it's planning an early retirement, having a first child, or starting a new business, Kevin helps you chart out your course from where you are now to where you could be. So it's like you have your vision and your plan, and he helps you get there. He's a lifelong entrepreneur, a constant learner, and bookaholic. I love that. I am too. Kevin lives in Silicon Beach in Los Angeles. We're glad he's able to take time with us today because he's slammed, because you can imagine with the markets and with all that's going on in that end, he's probably not getting much sleep. So I'm so glad he's taking time to talk with us today, cutting through so much that's thrown at us today with the news and social networking. We need the news and we need the social networking, but we have to sift through it. Otherwise, how do we know what to believe and what not to believe? Without further ado, I'd like to welcome Kevin. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, Natalie, thanks so much for having me on. I'm excited to get to be on your show.
Oh, I'm so glad you were able to make it today. I got on yours yesterday when you did the about the stimulus plan, and it was very, very educational. I really loved it. So,
Yeah, we've been tracking that because one of the things we found was a lot of our clients were our small business owners, and they started bombarding us, and they said there's so many stories out there about what's available to us and what we can apply for and what we can't apply for, and we've already applied in the past, and can we reapply? And so we kind of just fell into that, and we started having so many people interested. So we sent out an email and a couple of Facebook posts, and we ended up having 250 people register for the class in like 48 hours.
Wow.
There's a lot of interest out there trying to figure out what's going on in our world and trying to navigate everything. So
it's overwhelming. It really is overwhelming. Right now with the stimulus plan, there's help that people can get, that they should sign up for pretty quickly. And this is in the United States, which most people are going to listen in the United States. We do have some people in other areas as well. What do you recommend people to do first right now? Is it to get a hold, call landlords, mortgage companies, look at their bank accounts, what do you think people should do first?
Yeah, I think
through this,
because
we're in the thick of it.
It kind of depends on whether you're a small business owner or whether you're just trying to figure out you just got laid off or you just got furloughed and you're trying to figure out how to make it. I mean, the first thing I would tell everyone to do is to do their best to make sure that that they're watching their expenses and to start cutting things that aren't necessary. Like look through the past couple of months and see where your money has gone and say, is there anything I can cut? Because one of the things I tell clients is that, yes, maybe you're okay now, but we don't know for sure what's going to happen in the next 30, 60, and 90 days. And so you just want to begin to prepare yourself for whatever is coming down the pike. Because I had a friend call me yesterday that they thought their job was secure, and then their boss called them and said they're going to furlough everything. So just making sure that you are beginning to cut back on your expenses. And then if you are overextended, right, if you are laid off and you don't have enough of an emergency fund, call your landlord, call your bank, and begin to negotiate with them some sort of plan to be able to hold off. And different states, municipalities have passed different legislation. California has some different things that have come down from the governor's office. So just begin to see what that looks like and begin to create a plan of how you can survive that. Survive what's coming. But so that's the first thing. But then the second thing I would do is, if you're just an individual, I would watch for the stimulus checks and what you need to do to make sure you're on the list, because they can send if they don't have your bank information, they'll send you a check. But it's going to take a while for the stimulus checks to reach you if they send you one in the mail. And so you want to make sure that you have up-to-date information with the IRS so you can get the stimulus check in your bank account, and they're going to release that soon. And then if you're a small business owner, there are a number of programs that are available to you to help you get cash, to help kind of float you over the next couple of months. And we can talk about that in a minute if you'd like.
Yes, definitely. Absolutely. I know one of the when you're talking about expenses, just from a personal experience, I belong to the YMCA, right? And
yeah.
The YMCA in many, many communities is amazing what they do for the kids, the community, the programs, the before and after kids, even helping with breakfast and lunch. It's huge, when you really look at some of the, a lot of people may have gym memberships right now, and they may be canceling anything they're not using, or different things that are just not needed right now. And I think it's wise to look at these and see if there are some businesses that you still may be able to support because they're your community businesses. I know with the YMCA, they're struggling because I've heard over 70% of their dues come. I mean, 70% of the monies that they run on is from paying members because they have so many members that are not paying, you know, if they're because of community issues, right, can't afford it, et cetera, and all the social work they do. So, for example, I heard that, people were canceling left and right, and I jumped in to ask if I can help in that regards, too, as far as us contacting people through the office, et cetera. And I'm keeping mine going because of that. Does that make, you know, because a lot of things people aren't going to think about. They might just go through and uncheck and not realize, you know, wait a minute, is it, we don't know, like you said, is this 1 month, 2 month, 3 month, but is it something you can afford to do if it really is making a difference for your community? Does that make sense?
Exactly. And I think you're right. I think finding ways that you can support local businesses, because small businesses are going to be hurt by this worse than anyone. You know, a lot of big companies have cash reserves and they're going to be able to float this, but it's that restaurant that you go to every week down the street that they can't have their doors open. I mean, even if they're doing carry out business now, they're not doing near the revenue they were before.
Enough.
And so, and so even reaching out to them and saying, how can we support you? So some businesses I know in our neighborhood have said, hey, could you buy gift cards now that you'll use later so we can get that revenue on the front end?
Great idea.
So just reaching out to your local small business owners and saying, hey, we love you. We want to support you. We know this is a difficult time. How can we support you? And then also, as you like, looking at other things, which, you know, I would typically say, you know, your Netflix subscription, but you might need that more now than ever. But whatever those reoccurring subscriptions are that are coming out of your account that you forgot about. We live in a subscription culture. Everything is on a reoccurring model now, and you just forget about it. And like the other day, I went through my credit card, and I was like, I forgot I subscribed to that thing. I was paying $20 a month for some service I never use. And so looking through, finding out what those things
exactly.
are.
Yeah, a lot of them. I was thinking the other day, why did I pay for that since 1990s? Like, I'm not kidding. I mean, that's bad, right? It's really bad. But, I mean, because you get busy running businesses and everything, and you go, you know, and then I have, like, the Legal Shield, and it's like I hardly ever used it, but I still want to keep it. But there's just so many things, though, that you look at and you go, was that really necessary? Or, you know, when you sign up on the internet, you have to be so careful because it's not always there where they say you want to buy something for $7, you just want to get a report or a quick book, and then there's a little fine print that says you're going to be put into a subscription recurring. It's very hard to see a lot. I mean, it really is. It's not that it's always as blatant as it should be. And so right now I think a lot of people are looking at things more closely than sometimes. But you being a financial advisor and planner, you probably really scrutinize your stuff. You probably know every single thing that comes out of there, except like $20. I can see that. I don't know.
It depends, right? Like, so I'm just like everyone else. I mean, there are times when I'm really on top of it, and then there are other times where life gets so busy, and I'll go 3 or 4 months, and I didn't pay attention to what's there. I mean, I'm trying to categorize it as best I can, but I'm not going through it with a fine-tooth comb. The way I should, because things just slip through. In fact, I saw the other day that there was this business that was making $1 million a year in revenue. Sorry about my.
It's okay.
So I saw the other day that there was a business that was making $1 million in revenue. And their business model was they would sell you online a small trinket, like a $5 for a bracelet. And then when you bought that, it signed you up for a $20 a month subscription to their group something or other that they had, but no one knew. It didn't say it anywhere. It was in the fine print.
You can't do that.
And so they were just billing people month after month, and it's $20. You don't even hardly notice it, and you're like, I don't know what that is, but I'll deal with it later. So, yeah. So I wish I could say I'm superior to everyone else, but I'm not.
No, but I can't tell. I'm looking, like, you know, I'm almost afraid to buy it because it doesn't always – it's supposed to legally be there and to say that this is, but it doesn't. It's not always clear. I've had many times where it shows up, and I didn't do that. I didn't click that off. I was really being careful. But, it's really so go through, really see what you're doing. I'll try to support your community as much as possible, right? What else right now and you think? Get in. Do you think people should stock up on food? Go ahead.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting question. So I, if you'd asked me 3 weeks ago, I would have kind of made fun of all the preppers, you know, the people who are out buying up all the toilet paper at my grocery store. Mm-hmm. But whether right or wrong, my grocery store is now out of toilet paper, and I need paper
Mine
towels.
Too.
I went to get paper. I haven't known to get paper towels in 2 weeks. And so
exactly.
I think if you see supplies, if you're at the store, if you see supplies, you should probably get, you know, get a decent amount. Like, don't go over the top. But you should get enough
right.
to last you a while. And you want to keep the number of times, I mean, I can't give you medical advice, but you want to keep the number of times
right.
you're going out to the store to a minimum, you know, because they're finding out more and more that the coronavirus is airborne. And in fact, the CDC is considering, or the, I can't remember if CDC or the World Health Organization is considering suggesting that everyone wear a face mask now when they go out.
Mm.
But honestly, if you don't have goggles on, I mean, because it can also, NIH is doing a study where it looks like a lot of people are being infected through their eyes. So you don't want to be going out more than you need to. So getting enough supplies where you're only going to the store every couple of weeks. And then the other thing, and this is what I'd really encourage people to do, is to use food delivery, if you have Instacart or something in your area, they can go do the grocery shopping for
oh,
you.
Oh, that's
bring
right.
It to
get
you.
It delivered for you.
Get it,
yeah,
get it delivered.
Good idea.
Because the less people in the store, the better. But what I would really encourage you to do is to tip those people well and to make, I mean, they are risking their own health to be out there helping
mm-hmm.
you and delivering your food. And so whether you're ordering from Grubhub or Uber Eats or you're using Instacart, be sure to tip those people well and take care of them.
Definitely. It's a lot of people risking their lives. It's unbelievable. I mean, it's just, I don't think we took it as seriously before. You know, you're hearing a lot of nursing homes having a lot of issues and
So many situations.
Yeah, go ahead.
The other thing I was going to say, though, is I was just going to tell people, particularly around their personal finances or around their investment accounts, like, don't panic. In fact, don't open your statement from your broker right now. If you have a 401k IRA, just don't look at it. I mean, because even, like, I've been doing this for a long time now. I started investing right before the crash in 2000. So I've been following the markets and investing for a long time. And, like, even I, after all this time, like, when I see that I'm down, I'm just like, oh, it's hard to deal with. And so just don't even look at it. Because what we do know is when we look at the past, we know that after we have these economic downturns, that we're going to have an upswing and we'll go back up. In fact, it's hard to lose money in the stock market. If you look back over the past 80 years, it typically wins more than it loses. I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but I think over the past 75 years, the market's been up all but 14 of those years. And in the years that it's up, it's up on an average of 19%. In the years it's down by 12%. So when it's up more than it is down. Those may not be the exact figures, but the market, it's hard actually, when you have a long-term view, it's hard to lose money in the market. Now, where you lose money, though, is because you freak out. You know, you look at your statement, you've lost all this money, you're like, I'm going to get out now. The problem is when you get out, you end up missing out on the upswing. I did this in 2008. And I've been putting all the money into my retirement account. I did what I was supposed to do. I put all this money in 2008. I had just bought my first condo. I was living in Washington, D.C. I bought my first condo, and I was doing all the things that a young professional should do, and I was maxing out my retirement account. And then the crash happened, and, you know, we were down by 45%. And so I just decided, you know what, I need to get out. I don't want to lose any more money. And what ended up happening was that I missed out on the upswing afterwards. And I ran the numbers the other day. And if I had – I pulled my money out. I forget the exact date. But I realized that if I put my money back in the market, when it was all said and done, you know, it was my life savings at the time, but it turns out it was only about $10,000. Mm-hmm. But had I taken that $10,000 in March of 2009 and put that
right.
in the market, by March of 2020, this year, so 11 years later, that $10,000 would have turned into $50,000. But here's what's
really
remarkable. Had I taken that same 10,000 and what, you know, because to buy in March of 2009, it was really scary. You know, the world seemed
right.
like it might fall apart. And so to right. buy during that time, it was scary. Now, if I'd waited till March of 2010, when things begin to feel a little bit safer and maybe I'll you know, invest my money, what I realized is that by waiting till March of 2010, so now 10 years later instead of 11 years later, so in
right.
March of 2020, that 10,000 would have only become 30,000. By waiting 1 year, waiting till things felt stable, you lost out on $20,000 return over
right,
over that
right.
time period. So
that makes
anyway,
sense.
So don't freak out. Don't take your money out. And if you can, buy in a down market. So as the markets were declining, I was buying all the way down. And
right.
we don't know what's going to happen, but if you dollar cost average and you just have a plan, you know, you say, I'm just going to keep adding to my account or keep adding to my investment account as it goes down, it's really hard to lose over the long term. So.
Right. That's that makes total sense. Absolutely. But now, what it,
and
example,
I should give one other thing. I should give my typical disclaimer right here. Like, I'm a financial advisor. Yeah, I'm a financial
right.
advisor, but I'm not your financial advisor. And so your situation is unique. And so it's going to depend on each individual person. So I'm kind of painting with a broad brush here, but. Yeah, I'm not your financial advisor. And
we are not giving legal advice. We're not, right.
And we're
not
giving
legal
advice
on anything. We're just, there's also food for thought. You know, some of these things we talk about on the show, we could literally do a three-day course on, you know, so it's always good for people to have. I love to be able to put stuff out there and then people do their own research too, because there's a lot of things that people just aren't aware of, you know, and it really does
yep.
bring it home for them to think about it, have food for thought too. So yeah, when you're looking at some of the market, do you think, like, say, okay, we had the crash 2008, do you think it takes 3 to 5 years if people keep their money in, that it's pretty safe by that point if they don't touch it? Or is that like a good rule of thumb, or there really isn't a rule of thumb? So if people leave it in now,
you know,
in 3 to 5 years, there's no way for us to have a crystal ball, but
there's no way to have a crystal ball. If you're just asked, like, just my personal opinion, I don't think this is going to be a 3 to 5 years to get back to our previous highs. I think as soon as the economy comes back online and we get back to work, I think we're going to see a massive swing to the upside, and that unless there's something unexpected happens, I think it's quite likely that we could be back up higher than we were just a few months ago within a year. I think
really?
The recovery will
be wow,
fairly,
be
fairly quick. Yeah, because, I mean, the underpinning of our economy, we're strong. Like, our unemployment, unemployment numbers were at record lows. Things were going really well. And so once we get people back to work, then you have people getting back to work, beginning to pick up where we left off. And then you had all this money that was flooded into the market from the stimulus package and things like that. That's really going to, I think it's going to give a lot of fuel to what was already a strong economy. And so I do think we're going to have a down period. It might take a year to year and a half, but I think it will be a fairly quick recovery. Now, this is me. I have no inside knowledge or information.
Right,
I could
right.
be completely
no, this is just,
wrong.
But it makes sense.
And we don't know what's going to, you know, the virus could mutate and come back stronger or more dangerous, or we just don't know. But if things kind of continue on the current trajectory, I think it's quite possible that we'll see it, that we'll see a fairly quick recovery.
Yeah, I hope so. It's just, I'll tell you, you know, a lot of things are going to change, because I think this has been such a wake-up call for everybody in so many different ways. And one positive is a lot of families are staying together and getting closer and spending quality time, you know, together. I'm going to try, this is going to sound goofy, but I'm going to try a Zoom party. Now, when we use Zoom normally, it's for, you know, a meeting and it's structured and you have it scheduled and you know what you're going to talk about, or you do question and answers, et cetera. But I just want to do, like, for friends, like a Zoom party and see how it goes, because I don't know, with all of us talking at different times and in different places, how that's going to be. But the other day I was just like, oh my gosh, I'm so used to working virtually. I did all brick and mortar for years until 99. And then I said, I really want us all to be virtual and as much as we can, you know, you mix it up. And but I've been going buggy. And for me to go buggy when I'm so used to working virtual is like, I can imagine how people are going that aren't used to it at all, you know? So I thought, yeah, let's have a Zoom party and see how that goes. We'll see. but, you know, with everyone talking at the same time, you know how that can be. That might be a little odd, but we'll try.
Yeah, I am. I'm part of a group here in Los Angeles called the Los Angeles Whiskey Club. It sounds a lot more fancier and bougie than it actually is. But we ended up having a Zoom get together. So it's once a month we'll get together and someone will kind of lead us through tasting different types of different unique whiskeys.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, and so it's a lot of fun.
I
don't know that much about. Yeah, I grew up a teetotaler, so I don't know that much about whiskey, and so it's been fun. But we had to cancel the last one, and so the woman who put this together, she's like, let's do it over Zoom. And so she went around and delivered to everyone the tasting for that evening. She put together these little bottles, and then we all, like 15 of us, got on Zoom, and it was a lot of fun. I mean, it went way better than I expected it would, and really, I felt in some ways more connected to the people that I had at the events in person. So it was
fun. I love it. Yeah, that's a great idea. So you do tasting and do, wonder what we could do. I have to think about some things because because meetings go beautifully, right? You know, when you're all having a different, when it's like kind of structured. But,
yep.
I like that idea. That's,
yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, we got to do more things because there's so much that we can, so much is changing, you know, and thank God for the internet, though, and the electricity and all that because we're really being able to rely heavily on this. So now, let's switch. Okay, so people are going to get in and let's give them your contact information as well.
Yeah, you can go to my website, foundryfinancial.org. Or you can just email me at kevin@foundryfinancial.org. And then the other thing, and I'll get into this a bit more in a few minutes, but I just created a domain today, businessonpurpose.org. And if you go there, the webinar Natalie just talked about from yesterday will be up there. The webinar's there. Our slide deck is there. And then also you can find a link to an application for a small business loan/grant that's available. So all that is there. So just go to businessonpurpose.org.
Okay. So this is perfect timing for us to switch over to the stimulus plan and what you were talking about yesterday with the grants and monies. And, you know, many people aren't aware of it because, you know, not everybody's watching the news or listening to the speeches and So let's dig into that a little bit because it's going to definitely, the stimulus plan. Well, so right now in the stimulus plan, most people, if it's income's what, under 75 single or if under 150 married, are going to get $1,200 checks, I think is what is coming out.
Yeah, $1,200 a person, $2,400 a couple, and then $500 per kid. And then at $75,000 for an individual, it begins to taper off up to $99,000. If you earn over $99,000 as an individual, I don't remember what the number is as a couple. It's not quite double that. I don't have it in front of me. But there's a break off point where you won't receive a check at all. But under seventy five for an individual or $150 for a couple, you'll get $1,200 each. And then from $75 to $99, you'll get it'll kind of step down depending on how much you earn. So that's coming to everyone, and you actually don't have to do anything to get that, but if you want to get it quicker and if your bank information has changed, you'll want to update that. And the IRS doesn't have the form up yet, but they said that's coming soon. So that's the broadest thing offering that's available to everyone.
I was just going to ask a quick question about that. Is that going to go out if anybody has, they filed taxes, have a Social Security number, or do they have to have received a refund? You know, I'm not holding you to this because I know there's so many different particulars with each one of these, but do you know?
I don't know. I do know that it requires that I would require you have a social security number and that you be, I know it requires you're a citizen. But beyond that, I don't know all the specifics. There's some unique things in the bill. Like if you're behind on child support, you don't qualify. And the same thing for some of the business loans. The bill, the most recent bill was 880 pages long. There's actually three bills related to coronavirus. One was called two that impact small businesses. One was they passed a couple weeks ago called Family First Coronavirus Response Act. And then they just passed the CARES Act, which is, I don't know what it stands for. And that's the one you've been hearing about that has $2 trillion in stimulus money available to people.
I don't know, because I want to go into all the details, more of the details like yesterday. I don't know, and you'll be able to answer this from being a financial planner, and how is our government going to be able to deal with this in the future? Is there going to be so much more money coming back in that it's going to make it? I mean, how are we going to handle this debt?
That's a very good question. Not only how are we going to handle the debt, but also, does this amount of money flooding into our economy, are we at risk for inflation in the future? And the answer is possibly. I would err on the side of it is. If I was a betting person, I would bet we're definitely going to see higher inflation than we've seen. We typically see around 2% inflation, but I think there's a high likelihood we're going to see a higher inflation over the coming few years. And the other thing that we're seeing right now is that like treasury bills, the yields are so low, and as interest rates begin to rise, I think that could really impact what have in the past been some really safe investments. You're going to need to work. I think you're going to need to work with a financial advisor, figuring out and kind of thinking through what the future looks like and how you invest your money. And if you've been a more like things that were the cautious, safe choice in the past may not be the right choice for the future. And one of the things we saw the past couple of weeks happen was there was no safe place to run. All the typical places that people would put their money to be safe were often down. Gold was down. Bitcoin was down. Bond yields were down, or bond prices were down. And so, just across the board, there seemed there was no place safe. People were liquidating, trying to get cash. Particularly, big players who were over leveraged, liquidating everything to try to get cash, which was driving everything down. But on the other hand, now there's some great buying opportunities. I think there's some incredibly priced bonds right now, some equities, really strong companies with strong balance sheets that are well priced. Now, I think the markets could potentially go down again a bit. I don't think we're going to see flash crashes like we did in the past few weeks. But all that to say, I think that inflation is likely, and at least higher inflation than what we've seen in the past few years. And I think you really need to work with an advisor and kind of thinking through your strategy. Now, the one thing I'll say is that the old 60-40 portfolio that, a lot of advisors recommend, it did fairly well. It held up fairly well over the crash. So it was down, that kind of standard 60-40 portfolio was down an average about 20% when things were really bad, when everything else was down by 35-40%. So there's still the age-old advice still holds, but I think as we go into the future, you want to stay in contact with someone to kind of help you kind of navigate all that.
Oh, definitely. I don't think we could do this on our own like this. It's just what do you think about China? I was noticing with mine, I can't think of the name off the top of my head, but it's like a China, it's a bank or something, and it's held out pretty well. I know that's, I don't want to be putting China out there as saying, hey, their stocks are good, but it's on the stock exchange. I don't know mine off the top of my head. I mean, I do know a lot of them, all of them. But it was something I was noticing going, oh, my gosh, this thing's done well. I mean, it's I don't know.
Yeah, the Chinese markets have actually begun to come back, and China is beginning to open back up. I mean, most of the Apple stores in China are open again, which is for me the indicator of how well the world is going, if I can get into an Apple store. So, China is beginning to open back up, and their economy is beginning to pick back up, but they still got a long way to go. Like, it's going to take them a while to get to where they were, which then trickles down and impacts us as well. So anyway, all that to say, the future is uncertain, and we're not exactly sure what it'll look like.
It's really tough, isn't it, trying to say. So, I mean, like, you'd think of, like, the airlines how does it work? And I'm asking you, just for my – when you want to buy oil, or you can buy oil stock, like, the barrels are going down, do you have to always buy oil through futures? Or you can buy
– Yeah, I mean, there's a – yeah, you can buy oil futures, which is a slightly riskier way to do it, unless you, I mean, know what you're doing. But the other thing is there are some exchange traded funds. So there's an exchange traded fund. I think it's XLE that follows oil companies. And so it's the energy sector rather. And so it's a way to, if you think the future of oil is going to be on the upswing, or the energy sector has a good future, you can buy that ETF and you'll have exposure to the energy sector without trading futures for
without
oil.
Without trading
the other
on
thing
a
is
future
right now,
thing with that type of risk? Okay.
Exactly. And the other thing is about, you know, XLE, its dividend yield is over 7.5%.
Really?
And so
that's
it's really an excellent yield right now. Now, that could get cut if companies start going bankrupt. But if you think that oil prices are going to go back to the upside and the oil industry is strong,
how could they go really low? I mean, even with electric cars and electric, we still are going to need oil for a while, don't you think? I don't know. I'm just throwing a speculation out there. But I remember in the 90s being $10 a barrel, and now to see 18 and 20, I'm like, whoa, this is like – but, of course, they're having a lot of things are going on. So that's good to know. So people can buy the ETFs, and they can still be in the stock market and without having to risk futures. Now, flipping over to futures, and then I know I'm going to – I want to go over the stimulus plan with you, because you really gave so much great information yesterday, and I'd like to have our listeners hear it. So flipping over, though, with like futures and hedging bets and different things like that, so there is a lot of risk. And I saw something in the news that said small mortgage bankers could go under because of these stimulus plan bringing the rates even, you know, where we're going because of the hedge funds. And I'm like, I didn't realize that government-backed loans could still be – they would be doing that. But then from what I understand, all of the mortgage companies will hedge their bets because of the rates, right, to protect them, whether they're going up or down. So I'm not asking for advice on that, but I'm trying to understand how would that – that's a risk that they all play, right, pretty much? And
Yeah, and it's an area I really haven't followed that closely. So I haven't really followed mortgage-backed securities or anything in that area that closely. But I do, I mean, one of the challenges, particularly for banks, is that as interest rates are driven low, the same price when you drive oil really low, you drive interest rates really low, it's harder for banks to make the same, to have the profit margins that they did, which is why I think we've seen a lot of the big banks have been down significantly. And it's just, I mean, large swings are rarely good for any industry. So, I mean, you even see with mortgage rates, you know, a couple of weeks ago, they were at ridiculously low rates, but now they've begun to swing back up. And so these ups and downs of mortgage rates is just, it's hard to stay on top of. And then people feel like, do I buy now? Do I refinance now? Is this the time? Oh, no, I'll wait. And then they miss out. And anytime you have volatility in the market, it makes it more difficult for people and just creates uncertainty and anxiety.
To figure out. Right, because I would still think the stimulus plan would be helping, but I guess it doesn't if it brings it down too low. Yeah, it's a tough one.
Yeah,
it's a tough one when you look at it.
Yeah, I mean, I think right now this is a time for realtors to be creative. You know, I'm seeing that some realtors they're doing Zoom or FaceTime house tours, right? They're doing tours.
Right.
But they're doing it by phone, and so I always believe that times of financial crisis or crisis in general are a great time to bring that innovation and to try new things. And so if you want to just keep doing the same old, you might get hurt. But if you're willing to adapt and try new things and adapt to the changing world, I think you can actually come out stronger on the other side.
I agree. We've always had, you know, you've got owner financing, negotiations, different ways to do things, of course, because the banks get involved. And if their banks are involved, it's a little different. But there's so many different ways to structure something, you know. And then you have people can do, you know, contracts upon viewing. I mean, there's so many things that you can do even in the midst of all this. So, you know, it's just knowledge is power, and it does create, you know, survivors out of all of us, doesn't it? Just makes us get up in there and lead and push. So, okay, so now let's loop over to the stimulus plan. You know about the $10,000 grants, the business loans, what people can do, where they should go to look up this information.
Yeah. So, like I said, if you want to, we spent about an hour and 10 minutes on a webinar yesterday kind of doing a deep dive, and you can watch that at businessonpurpose.org. It's literally just a website I created yesterday, so people can watch the replay.
Perfect.
Or today rather. But at a broad overview, kind of where we are is last week, both houses of Congress passed the Coronavirus Relief Act, and there's about $2 trillion of money that's been allocated to help jumpstart the economy and kind of provide a backstop for people who are being impacted by coronavirus. And so what happens is both houses of Congress pass it. It then goes to the president to sign it. So on Friday, the president signed it. And then after that, it goes to different agencies for them to write regulations around the law that was just passed. So it's going to go to HHS. It's going to go to the IRS. It's going to go to Treasury. And then they're going to write the regulations and how it's enacted. So everything that we know right now is tenuous. But what we do know is this, is that there are two major programs that are pools of money, rather, in this package, $350 billion total, that are available to small business owners with under 500 employees. And the thing that I think I'm most excited about is something called the shorthand for it is EIDL, the EIDL loan. It's the Economic Injury and Disaster Loan. And it's typically allocated for places that have been hit by a natural disaster, but there's also a provision for economic disaster. And so what you can do is you can apply for a loan, and loan amounts can be up to $2 million and can be paid back over 30 years. And you can use it to pay for debt and payroll and, you know, all the other things you're having trouble taking care of. But what's unique about this loan is the EIDL loan is that if you apply for this, and I have a link on the website that I mentioned, it takes 5 minutes to fill out this form, and you apply for the loan. Even if you don't get approved for the loan, or you decide, you know what, I don't want to take the money, Small Business Administration is giving advances, forgivable advances. I mean, they don't want to use the word grant, but it is a grant of up to $10,000 that is supposed to be paid out to you within 3 days of you filling out the application. So it's trying to get fast cash to companies to help them out. And so what I've told every client that I have that's a small business owner, I'm like, fill out this application. Just do it now. We'll figure it out later, because there's only for that particular piece, those $10,000 grants, There's only $10 billion that's been allocated to that, which isn't nearly enough, you know, for every small business owner in the country. And so you want to kind of jump on that right away. Now, how they determine whether you get the full $10,000 what that breakdown is, I have no idea.
Right.
And it asks for almost no information on this form. It asks for your gross revenue over the 12 months, and it asks for your cost, your fixed goods cost. Those are the only two numbers that they ask for. And they don't ask how much money you need or anything. Now, what they'll do is they'll then come back and say, you know, okay, you applied. We've connected you up with the loan officer. And how much money do you think you'll want? And at that point, you can maybe take the loan if you think you need it, or just say, you know what, I decided I didn't want it. But you'll go ahead and get this advance up to $10,000 paid into your bank account in a couple of days. So you need to jump on that right away. So that's the first program. The second program is called the Paycheck Protection Program, PPP. and $340 billion has been applied to this program. And essentially,
PPP.
What it's been created to do, PPP, yeah. And what it's been created to do is to help you keep your employees on the payroll. And essentially, they will loan you 2.5 times your average monthly payroll. So for easy math, let's say your monthly payroll is $10,000. You can get a $25,000 loan, and you can use that to pay payroll expenses, employee salaries, rent, utilities, mortgage interest, interest on debt incurred before February 15th. And the thing is, what makes this so amazing is that as long as you don't lay anyone off, you keep everyone on your payroll, this loan is completely forgiven. And so
wow.
You don't have to pay the money back. And then even if you do have to lay people off or you've already laid, as long as you bring them back on your payroll by June 30th, the loan can still be forgiven. And so in some cases, it makes most sense right now when things are so uncertain, maybe let them go on unemployment for a couple of months, but bring them back on, you know, when things have steadied, go ahead and get the loan. Steady your business, and then bring them back on before mid-June, and that loan will be forgiven. So those are both incredible opportunities that are available to companies, sole proprietors. It really is a very wide group
Fantastic.
Of people that this applies to, even nonprofits, as long as it's for non-religious or non-like proselytizing purposes. Nonprofits and religious groups can also apply for some of these programs.
That's fantastic.
So those are really
so
high level. We get more into the weeds.
So it's called EIDL. There's an EIDL loan that goes up to $2 million.
Yep.
And that's a disaster loan.
Up to $2
loan. Million. And then the $10,000 is for everybody right away. And then there's a PPP, Paycheck Protection Program, that helps if you have employees to keep them on the payroll. And you have all of this on businessonpurpose.org, right, which is
yep.
fantastic. And then they're going to go to the SBA, right, to file for it. Okay.
Yeah. So for the EIDL loan, they're going to go to the SBA link, and they'll fill that out. Literally, it takes 5 minutes. It says on the form it takes 2 hours and 10 minutes. It takes 5, which I haven't quite figured out why they –
Oh, really?
They put that
That's
there.
Funny.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. And then on the PPP loan, the cap on that is $10 million. So if you're a large employer and you have a lot of people on payroll, you can get up to a loan of $10 million, which will then be forgiven or can be forgiven. There are a bunch of caveats. Anytime you have federal regulation, there can be caveats. So on the PPP,
right,
you can't
right.
use it to pay
right.
pay for salaries over $100,000. But if you're an LLC, and even if you're a single member LLC and you pay yourself payroll, or you're a S corp and you pay yourself a payroll and you're the only person on payroll, you can still get this loan to help cover your expenses during this period of time.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. Awesome. So these are. That's fantastic. Yeah, so they're really trying to help and trying to get stuff out there. So it's so important for people to get on and do it as soon as possible, right? And
exactly.
I'm assuming if somebody's on unemployment, yeah, go ahead.
I just don't think there's going to be enough money to go around. I mean, they're already starting to think about a second round of stimulus, and so some
wow.
of this could be re-upped, and because I think some of this money is going to go really quickly.
Makes total sense. Makes total sense. So you're pretty positive about the outcome in the future, because this was such a tragic type of thing that came in and pulled the rug out from under us, right? It wasn't something that was kind of, you know, with the stock market when we, like with 2008, for example, just because I've been in the real estate world for 35 plus years, which just seems crazy.
Yeah.
But anyhow, and we could see, like, from 2000 to 2007, if you breathed, you could get a loan. It was just that crazy, right,
yep.
that people were getting loans they shouldn't be getting. And, you know, people were saying they made enough money to buy a $600,000 loan when they only made $20,000 or $30,000 a year. I mean, it was crazy.
Yep.
And many times they blame it on the mortgage the lenders, but I also blame it on people because they were signing it too, you know. So I don't think, you know, I think it was just all the way around, you know, that it – so that was kind of like – the dominoes are going to fall. That was like, oh my gosh, how long can this last? It can't, and it did fall. This, because it's so different and it's health related, not so much because you were saying, like, you know, the unemployment was low, the stocks were good, everything. So with the indicators, is that where you're coming from with that? Pretty much, that's why you have such a positive outlook on, you know. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, so, I mean, if you look at the past two major downturns we had, you know, in 2000, we had the tech bubble crash, and you had companies that were off 90% off their high. But they were just ridiculous valuations. There was incredible fiscal irresponsibility in a lot of these companies. They didn't have a plan to profitability. It was just people. It was just pandemonium. It was just everyone wanted in, and no one was being thoughtful, and companies were just spending money without any plan. After that, you know, Silicon Valley and other companies began being a lot smarter about the way they were spending and managing their money. And so we don't have that same kind of euphoria. So even though we have companies that have been up a lot, you know, tech companies and things like that, that I might think are overvalued, you don't have the same kind of euphoria that you had back then that caused that bubble. Well, then in 2008, what you had in the economy is you had a lot of dishonesty. You had a lot of fraud. There was a lot of things that were happening that created this unhealthy underpinning. Well, we're not seeing the same – that we you know, maybe there's something there we don't know about yet that's going to come out, but we're not seeing that same type of either euphoria on the upside or, you know, kind of a dark underside like we saw with the mortgage industry. And so I think the fundamentals of our economy were strong going into this, and this was kind of a black swan event that hit us out of left field that I think will come out of, you know, we'll be stronger coming out of it than we were going in. If we do things right and we use the money well and we use the stimulus well and we, you know, there's no guarantees, but I really feel hopeful. And part of the reason I feel hopeful is, you know, I'm a student of the markets, and when you go back and look at past economic crashes, when you go back and look at past economic crashes, we see, you know, recoveries and, you know, in 24 months, 36 months, whatever, we see really strong recoveries. And then what I think about is think about the Spanish flu in 1918. The impact, the global impact, was far more devastating than the impact so far, at least, of coronavirus. I mean, you know, you have numbers.
Right.
Some people estimate 50 to 100 million people died because of the Spanish flu, right? It just is unbelievable. And we forget that, I mean, they, you know, things were, a lot of the U.S. closed down back then. You know, Philadelphia was closed down, San Francisco, major cities were closing themselves down in 1918 and the period afterwards. But then following that, we end up with one of the strongest economic periods in our country's history, the Roaring Twenties. Now, there was, you know, that probably wasn't the most healthy time, right? Because then we have the Great Depression following that. But we forget, right, that follows immediately after the last major pandemic that we had. And so I think when you look back over the past, you know, few centuries or past centuries,
makes a lot of sense.
So that's why I feel kind of bullish on the future. That doesn't mean that we're not going to see more downturn in the near future. I mean, I think we could potentially retest the lows and go back and hit the lows that we were at a couple of weeks ago, or we could just keep going back up. Today, on the day we're recording this, the markets are kind of mixed, and the past couple of days they've really kind of settled down. I think in the long term, if you hold on, if you have a long term perspective, you'll do well.
That makes sense. Makes total sense. So you're listening to Kevin Lum, and this is Natalie Mullenix with Realty Universal. And Kevin, I'm so grateful that you've been on today. And definitely people need to be calling you and check in on this. And that's way more positive than what I was thinking. You know, it was kind of like, okay, we're just going to start over, but we're not starting over. You know, we have to be strong.
Yeah.
And you know, and take this time to kind of take a reprieve in a way too. You know, we want to work hard right now. It's definitely not the time to sit back and do nothing, but it is a good time to reevaluate and see where we are. We only have about 5 minutes left, so is there anything that you really want to put out that I haven't gone over either asked?
No, I think my kind of thing I want to leave people with is really around their investment accounts and just reminding you not to panic, that it's gonna be okay. When you look at the long term, when you look at the history of the stock market, it's gonna come back, and if you continue to buy during this down period, you'll come back stronger than ever. I was listening the other day to Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger. Charlie has been Warren's partner and is at Berkshire for years. No one ever talks about Charlie.
Oh, you're
but,
right.
He's kind of he's the unsung hero of Berkshire. he was saying that he and Warren have seen two downturns in their portfolios in their lifetime of over 50%. So this is someone who's made more money than anyone else ever in the stock market, and he has had in his time of managing his portfolio been down over 50% twice, and it came back
really
stronger than ever. And think about to be down by 50%. Right now I think we're down overall by 20-something percent.
And they were able to keep everybody with the not to sell too, because, you know, we'd think people would start bailing, but they didn't bail, I guess, if they made it back.
Yeah.
It came back stronger.
Yeah,
wow.
And so if you use these times well, you know, Warren always keeps a chunk of money in cash. So when there's an economic crisis, he can be buying. His kind of adage is when there is greed in the market, you should be fearful. And when people are fearful, you should be greedy. And
I love that.
Served
that's
him
so
really
true.
Well. The other thing that he said that I thought was just so wise was he said, don't think about it like as you're buying stocks. He said, but instead think about it that you're buying companies. And when you buy a company,
right,
you're not thinking about the value tomorrow, right? You're thinking about the value in 5 years. And so we live in an age of ETFs and index funds, and I think they're wonderful because they allow you to have market exposure and reduce your volatility, and you know they're really excellent for investors to have in your account. But we sometimes, because of that, forget that we own companies, and that when you are invested in the stock market, you are a shareholder. You actually have a piece of a company. And so I personally am a fan of owning individual equities, and so I have money in index funds, but I also own individual equities because I like to be able to feel a connection to these companies that I really believe in and follow and track those companies. And so I would encourage you to, you know, pick a couple companies out right now that you really like, you feel strong about, that have a lot of cash on their balance sheet, and begin to, you know, nibble. Don't take a large stake, but begin to nibble on a couple of those companies. And just see where you are in a few years.
That makes so much sense. Thank you so much. I think 40% is good for them to, if they balance, say, their debts to asset and liabilities, is like 40% good, or rule of thumb, or I don't know, I guess, or depends, huh?
Yeah, it just depends on each individual person. But a good rule of thumb,
when you're looking at the balance dates and the income state on the companies, if they have
on the companies,
they definitely. Yeah, I'm sorry, it wasn't clear.
Oh, yeah, on the companies. Yeah, I mean, I'm looking for companies that have, you know, $1 billion in cash. Right? So a lot, you know, you look at Amazon or you look at Apple. Apple has $125 or $150 billion in cash. Well, a company like that is going to be able to withstand the downturn. But not only that, they're going to be able to come use that cash, use that capital to buy up other companies, to buy things that will help them continue to grow in the future. Same thing with, you know, Berkshire. Berkshire has like $150 billion in cash sitting in their bank account. And so I'm looking for companies that have a lot of cash. And so I'm not even, you know, it's hard when you're trying to value companies and all that, but just looking for companies that are strong, that you believe in, that you think have a good future and investing in them, And but if they don't have a lot of cash on hand, right, it's going to be, if it's a smaller company, if it's a small cap and they don't have deep reserves and this extends for 6 months, right, they may have a hard time staying afloat. So that's why I'm a big fan of just looking at companies that have the money to withstand whatever the future holds.
Thank you. Thank you for coming on. We've gone through an hour already just like that. And I want to talk to you soon. And this has just been fantastic. And to everybody
so
out
yeah,
there.
I love getting to be on your show.
We'll do it again, too. So but to everybody out there, I wish you peace.
Thanks so much, Natalie.
Thank you.
What's up, world, and welcome to Realty Universal Radio, the fastest hour in